Hello everyone, my name is Karen Pills. My name is Karen Pedraza. I'm a student at UC Davis School of Law, and I've had the opportunity to be an enforcer in the Flores Council. It's been an amazing opportunity to be able to visit these children in the detention centers. And also it's been very complex, very stressful, but it's hit my heart in ways that I have never felt before. And I'm really happy to be here with all of you to share some of the things that I've observed, along with my colleagues who've been to the detention centers. So, as Holly was explaining, a couple of students and myself have gone to YOLO, and we have seen still some of the same problems that Holly mentioned 4 years later. A lot of the kids are still being medicated and without parental consent, and the temperature in the detention center is really cold, it's really low, and a lot of the kids complain about that. And the kids aren't still notified about their transfer. So if they come from a different facility and they get stepped up to this secure facility, a lot of times they don't get notified. They're not notified in a language that they can understand. Or they're woken up in the middle of the night, 2 or 3 a.m. And, you know, these kids come here traumatized. They have already gone through a heroin journey to the United States, to the border, a lot of them crossing, you know, the Guatemalan border, the Honduran border, the Salvadoran border, the Mexican border, now the U.S. border. They've gone through a lot. And so the simple fact that they're woken up in the middle of the night is one of the most, to me, is like inhumane things to do to a child who has already been through so much. And as a student, I feel so protecting of these like loving, tender children who still have a smile on their faces after everything that they've been through. And so some of the things that we've seen at YOLO, I've also seen at another center that I've been to, which is in Tornillo, Texas. And it's about 30 miles from the border. And it's really hard to get there. I don't know if any of you have been to the border. It's all desert. It's hard to even get to the facility. Like, my group and I almost went to Mexico instead of making it to the facility. So if you can picture that, it's meant to isolate this population of kids, and it's meant to silence them. Nobody can hear the children. The children can't see the community, the Texan community, the Paso community, and you have to go through 2 security checks to even get there. So if that paints a picture in your mind, that's what it looks like. And some of the biggest issues that we saw at Tornillo were the fact that it was a tent city. There was no physical buildings. They called it a soft structure, which is all tents. The rooms where the children stayed were 100 plus 200 beds in one large tent. And the kids often didn't have anything to do. They maybe got radios, they maybe got a few books, but they were mostly idle. And what we heard from the kids is that they built up a lot of anxiety having nothing to do. And they always had to be escorted by someone from BCFS, which is a contractor that was hired to manage the facility. And the kids, from what we heard in the declarations and from their stories, like, it felt like they lost a sense of freedom even more than when they were traveling up to the border. Because when they were traveling up, yes, it was dangerous, but they at least chose where they would go. But here, they were always escorted by a staff person. And then they only got 10-minute phone calls twice a week with their parents. A lot of them wanted more time. They haven't seen their parents in months. The length of stay at Tornillo was was about 2 to 5 months for some kids or more for others. And the reason kids stayed there a long time was because the government kept pressing that they were waiting for the fingerprints of the sponsors. They were waiting for the fingerprints. And as Professor Holly Cooper was saying, it was a very manufactured, government-manufactured crisis. Fingerprints take less than an hour. Some people say 24 hours, but we confirmed in our homestead trip that it takes less than an hour to process fingerprints. Even if you're across the state, like across the country, it doesn't matter. You can process those very quickly. So there was no need to keep these children there. And as a daughter of immigrants, I felt so connected to the kids because I wondered, like, what if my parents were there? What if my siblings were there? What if my friends were there? And so, you know, our team left just wanting to do everything to get them out. And then, you know, the conditions weren't ideal either. There was portable showers and there was portable bathrooms, and for a human being to live in those kinds of conditions for months, I mean even weeks, is something horrible. And there was about, I think, 2,000 kids there, 2,000 to 3,000 kids there. So it was this mass operation that, I mean, it took a lot of staff to manage, but it also limited the amount of time, I think, that the children got with clinicians, psychologists, phone calls with their parents. And then I felt even more outraged when I found out that it cost $1,000 per day to keep that child there. $1,000 a day. And they get, I mean, only 3 meals a day, and it's not fresh fruit, it's not, you know, $1,000 dinner. So those are some of the thoughts from Torneo. And on a personal note, like I mentioned, my family is Mexican, and that's why I'm wearing Mexican dress tonight, to just continue being inspired by these stories, because the stories that we hear from a lot of these children really touch your heart. But I think that, you know, we can do a lot to help these kids protest, publish stories, talk to our neighbors. And what I personally do with these stories is I do build up a lot of anger, and there is some sadness, but I think that I definitely put in all that energy into my work that I continue doing. And I mean, I hope that that's a good way to deal with the trauma. But I think, you know, as we're listening to these stories, it's always good to keep in mind that there's a lot of things that we can still do to help these children and families who are detained. And so, as Professor Blake was saying, I did just come back from Homestead, Florida on Friday. And I was there with a group of four other people. And Homestead is by far one of the most atrocious facilities that I have ever been to. It's, to me, it's worse than YOLO. It's worse than Torneo, and that was a tent city. Homestead is just, I mean, I don't even have the words for it. Several kids told me, get me out of here, if that leaves you with anything. Yeah, I mean, it was very, very intense experience, but I feel very blessed to have been able to talk with these children. And and yeah, we did about 10 interviews in one day. And then on the second day, we did a little bit more than 10, just because the children had a lot to say, especially being in such a facility. Again, the children are allowed 2 phone calls for 10 minutes each week. And one of the resounding patterns was that we get a list of the children who are in the facility, and we saw that there was a lot of Indigenous last names. And then we spoke to one of the other attorneys there, and she actually said that at least 40% are Indigenous. And so we saw a large population was Guatemalan, Honduran, and Salvadorian, but mostly Guatemalan. And that brought up a lot of concerns for me and for my team, because there's no way to communicate with these kids if they speak an Indigenous language, like Quiche, if they're Mexican, Mixteco, Zapoteco. We just were very shocked that Indigenous kids were being held there. Of course, you know, it's shocking that any child is held there, but I think just for specifics, you know, how can a clinician who only speaks Spanish or English communicate with an Indigenous speaker? And how can, you know, if the cafeteria make sure that the child is receiving food that they are allergic to or food that they like? And then we were concerned that the Indigenous kids were maybe feeling further isolated from people who had authority to provide for their needs while they were there. So that was one of the things that was very concerning. And then the other thing that was concerning was that there was this very regimented no contact rule in Homestead. And I forgot to mention, but Homestead is a temporary shelter for children, so they're only supposed to be there 20 days, 20 to 30 days. And so one of our main things going there was to make sure that the kids would be transferred after they had been there 20 to 30 days, but we found some kids who had been there for over 200 days. But now to the no contact rule, there's kids from 13 to 17 years old, and a lot of kids haven't reached adolescence, and so a lot of them are brothers and sisters. A lot of them come from a very close-knit community, and so the kids, especially some of the females, were very, very unhappy because they said that when their friends would leave the detention center, they wanted to hug them goodbye, they wanted to hold their hand, or they wanted a kiss on the cheek, because they had formed such a great bond with the other children who had been there that they just felt like they were their sisters or their brothers, and they weren't allowed to touch. And so we were very shocked by that, especially because one girl told us that she had just been wanting a hug. I ended up like patting her on the back and like giving her a side hug, contraband hug. But it was really shocking because I mean, as a human being, we want to empathize, we want to sympathize, we want to comfort each other if someone's crying, and the fact that these children can't do that to us sounded like a lot of silencing of their voices and their stories and their personal feelings. And so that's definitely one of the things that we noted in the declarations. And in terms of food, a lot of the kids said that the food was very disgusting. In Yolo, they said, one kid said that the food looked like an old man's vomit. The oatmeal that they ate looked like old man's vomit. And in Yolo, in Homestead, one of the girls said, I get stomach aches from the food there, and so I don't eat anything except the salads and the crackers. And in Homestead, it costs $700 a day to keep a child there. So if they're not getting their $700 meal. And in terms of medication, I did speak to a couple kids who were taken outside of the facility for clinical services, psychological services. But I think, you know, yeah, and there wasn't parental consent for any of this, but I think one of the other things that was very concerning to us and to the psychologist was that to go to a psychologist was like a punishment. The kids were told, you know, if you cry, if you keep crying, if you feel depressed, if you act out, if you get reported, we're gonna send you to a psychologist. So it was like they were being tormented or like punished with the idea of getting a psychologist. And to us that was just incredible because psychologists are there to serve you, to support you, especially for these kids who've come through so much trauma. And so that was something that, you know, our psychologist was very concerned about. And a lot of the kids didn't want to take medication, so they would hold back the tears. And they were just left with massive headaches as a result. I talked to at least 3 or 4 girls who told us that. And yeah, I think just some kind of some thoughts and takeaways after these like 3 amazing opportunities that I've had to visit children is that this is a government manufactured crisis and it needs to end now. These are children who will be the future adults of this country, and they deserve to be treated with dignity. For children who are detained anywhere, I mean, if you get an opportunity to protest, I would protest for the immediate release of these children because fingerprint delays and requirements such as demanding pictures of the child with the sponsor are ridiculous. A lot of these kids haven't even seen a cell phone in their lives. And then also the florist protections really need to be followed to the T. There has to be parental consent for medication and there has to be counseling provided. And the food and the water has to be, you know, at least decent. And then one of the things that, I mean, to end on a good note, on a happy note, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was coming back on the flight was that I met little warriors and I met little superheroes. And I just kept thinking of the stories of specifically 2 girls that I had met and just like how they will be forever be superheroes in my heart. And it's been really great sharing this with all of you and I hope that you go out into the world and protest.